How's it going, Rachel? Good to hear your voice.
It's good to hear your voice too, Alex. We're looking forward to hearing your voice in person at the Tuning Fork on the 14th of March, which is when you're going to be playing for us here next. Miami Memory, let's talk a little bit about your album to start off with. You've said this is maybe your most sincere record. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think if I ever described it as sincere, I suppose I was talking about something that was coming from a much more personal place. You know, ideally, as a songwriter, you know, as I'm trying to perfect the craft in my own sort of way, I would like to think that if I'm capable of putting the microscope upon characters and studying and creating worlds for characters to exist in, then I should be able to also study my own life and make the same critiques and make the same comments on the way that I exist, as well as the characters that I create and other people, essentially. So I think Miami Memory is my first attempt at writing, you know, not entirely, but more and more from my own perspective.
I think it's quite an interesting maybe tension throughout this record, because of course we have come to know your music as this character study. So when we're sort of listening to this, knowing that some of it's coming from a much more personal place, but then there certainly is still a little bit of you know, character building that you're doing within this record. There is an interesting thing when you're listening to it, if you're sort of trying to work out, I guess, where the line between fiction and reality kind of sits. How do you go about like positioning yourself in the songs that you write? Not necessarily just in the personal ones, but in these kind of characters that you develop.
Well, for one thing, I'm always writing songs in my head. If I have a spare moment, I tend to be thinking about, you know, how I could poeticize or sort of construct circumstances that I've experienced or conversations that I've had, how I can turn them into songs. It's just an obsession of mine, you know, it always has been. I think that largely most of my inspiration and most of what motivates me is conversation, either with friends or with strangers, sometimes even conversations that I overhear in public. Certainly experiences that I've had with other people tend to inform the characters that I create, you know. So whether it's like a villain or a downtrodden kind of character singing some kind of blues, you know, in terms of the lyrical content, I want to sort of breathe a kind of like a tenderness, and a sort of I want to kind of appreciate and highlight the nuance of what it means to be human. That's what I want to do.
You've also often explored the nuances of what it means to be a man as well, and kind of explore some of the more toxic aspects of masculinity. How do you approach that? Because that is quite a difficult topic to deal with in any circumstances.
Yeah, I think that I feel as though, you know, with my experience growing up in Australia, you know, which is in Sydney, which has such a diverse community of people, whether it be it's a diverse set of identities, you know, in Australia. And my understanding and the way that I try and see things, you know, generally is that, like, everyone has their own individual story. I mean, the internet and social media and works of fiction and certainly reality TV and documentaries has taught us that, you know, that there isn't, generalizations aren't really going to assist in any kind of human understanding. And it shows, you know, when it leads all the way to elections, you know, and you see that there are huge subsets of people who feel unaddressed and feel left out or feel like they haven't been taken care of, you know. And I think that generalizations tend to fracture society in a way that, you know, people get offended by generalizations. People feel like they need to retaliate when they are defined by an identity that isn't fluid, because everyone is individual and everyone has their own story to tell. Now that you know why I'm leaving, and your mom's yelling out that she hopes I don't come back, of course she would say that. Forget what I told you about your demons. They're just thoughts in your head while you sleep, no more than that. Now fetch my duffel bag.
my ride ain't here, then it's coming. I can feel it not so far away. And I know you're angry, youngin'. Dry your eyes up, or you won't see big dog walking away. Now if you think I'm chasing the seasons like a van is someplace to be, I'm your stepdad, and I know they say I'm scheming to leave him, dreaming my life away. But if you see my name in the headlines and they're all pissing on me, I'm your stepdad, and I know they say I'm frail and broken, but you can't treat your mom that way.
When I attempt to write about the state of what it means to be a man, it's me believing that I have the license to do so, because that's kind of what society has told me to be. You know, I was raised in Sydney, Australia, part of a sporting, masculine, macho culture. It took a long time for me to find out who I really was, because I didn't feel necessarily satisfied by that stereotype.
Mm.
And people expect a straight man to behave a certain way, because it's easier if everyone just behaves in the traditional manner, you know. And I think that's what identity culture is about kind of like freeing people from a sort of a mold of what they're supposed to be. So I mean, what I'm doing is just kind of like studying the aspects of masculinity that I've had to revolt against, you know, in order to find out who I really was as a person. And I'm still doing that, you know, finding out who I am, what my identity is. I find it to be cathartic, and I find there to be a sense of freedom in writing about sort of, you know, villains or downtrodden people, because I'm trying to shed what, you know, ultimately a society has cast upon me in terms of what they're expected of me and my behavior and who I identify as.
Mm.
And if I find that if I write about, say, a toxic quality or a violent or aggressive or negative quality in a character, then I'm shedding that myself. I'm denying it myself.
It certainly gives you a certain space beyond yourself to be able to think about these ideas as well, because it can be a very lonely thing to be exploring your identity within your own head. I guess music gives you that ability to share that with other people as well. I'm quite curious, as a writer, where you see the line being, though, because it must be quite difficult sometimes to, I guess, explore these ideas and feel like you're not necessarily giving too much of yourself away, or alternatively putting up too much of a wall between yourself and this character you've created. How does that sort of feel for you as a writer?
First off, I was sort of like came up on the music scene, and the discussion was largely political sense, you know, how important is art and how important is music, you know, how necessary is it?
Hmm.
And I think largely people take for granted the importance of music. You know, it was, once music was available for free, when the internet came out, it was obvious how much people valued music. They didn't really value it at all. And certainly, we're talking about monetarily, financially, you know, because music has great value in culture and in groups of people. People use music and employ music to soundtrack their lives. It assists them with creation of emotion, and it also helps to understand emotions and to get a grip on your own reality. Music has that ability to help you overcome personal problems. So I have always felt that music and art and expression, I've always held it as the most important part. You know, it's my main skill. It's what I do. I've worked every other job that you possibly can, and this one I found is the only one that I'm actually good at. It's the only one that I can do consistently, and it's the only one that I do when I do it. Time seems to go at the pace that I really like it to go at. So I feel that balancing the characters that I write and the subjects that I cover, I feel that it's a very, very important thing for me personally, and I also, you know, on some level think that it's important for society. And I think that honest art is the most important thing for me. And so I find that I'm at my most successful when I've created something honest, even mm-hmm. if it's brutal. If it's brutal, you know, ultimately the way that the music industry works, the market decides,
yeah.
you know, if an artist is going to be successful or not. I create music to satisfy myself and a small group of friends, why I do it, and the market will decide if I can keep working on it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm quite interested in your group of friends and the people that you, I guess, work with when you're working on a new project. Obviously, you've got Roy Malloy, your resident sax yeah. man, who comes often on your albums and to your live shows as well. And your girlfriend, okay. Jemima Kirk, has been quite pivotal, I guess, in this project in many ways. Who has been people that you've used as touchstones for creating Miami Memory?
Certainly an important figure. You know, you've mentioned Roy and you've mentioned Jemima. An important figure would be Jonathan Rado, who produced the record in Los Angeles and we recorded it. An incredibly talented musician and has a brilliant mind for music generally. He's become a dear friend of mine and of Roy's, and I believe will continue to be a collaborator of ours on some level for mm-hmm. the rest of our career. Marta Salogni is a sound engineer from Italy, and she is based out of London, and she has been my favorite sound engineer for some years. She worked under a fantastic engineer named David Wrench, who's Welsh, and I'd worked with on previous projects, and he was always telling me, you got to meet Marta and you got to listen to what she does. So finally we got to work together after being, you know, we were friends for some years, and I was always, every project she did, I was like, holy shit, I'm not going to be able to afford her after a while, you know, I really want to work with Marta. And
yeah.
it finally came up. We did a couple of songs on our record Forced Witness with her, and she blew me away with what she could do with sound. And finally, you know, it worked out. It's the best sounding record that I've ever been a part of. And that's because of Marta's ability and also Rado's creativity and the way they collaborated together, which was really, mm-hmm. really professional. You know, along with the players, the band, mm-hmm. we have Henry Lindstrom on drums and Justin Nyson on bass guitar, Jack Ladder on guitar, Holiday Sidewinder singing. We have people like Lola Kirk singing and Jackie Cohen, Natalie Maring, just a really incredible group of people that got together for a month and I believe made the best record that we've ever done. So it was a special group of people.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for chatting to me this morning, Alex Cameron. It's been a real pleasure. We're looking forward to seeing you in Auckland soon.
Are you going to come along to the show?
Yeah, I'll certainly be coming along to the show. Thank you very much for your chat today, and we'll see you just a couple of months.
Come and say hello. I'll hold you to that.
You going to come and say hello? That was Rachel talking to Alex Cameron live earlier this week. Alex Cameron playing the Tuning Fork Saturday, the 14th of March. Tickets still available for that show just, I think, from Ticketmaster. Getting really into the nitty-gritty with Rachel there.
Yeah.
Life, art, working hospo, and the rest of it. We'll be back after these.